You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Friday, 7 August. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're going to talk Alex Davis, talking MTN. We're going to be talking Tencent as Trump sets to ban it. Tracy Davies from Just Share on the Investec climate risk disclosures. And Praveen Subramani, CEO of FNB Private Bank Lending, on when you should be selling investment properties. The show is proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Some morning headlines: Sanrail ready to implement 30 billion rand worth of construction projects. And CNBC, Trump issues executive order banning US transactions with WeChat and TikTok in the next 45 days. Morning markets, US green, S&P was up 0.6, NASDAQ plus 1% higher. Asia red, Sydney off 0.7. Tokyo off 0.8. Commodities also red, except gold, of course, at $2,065 an ounce. The rand, 17.56, 19 cents weaker on yesterday. And top 40 opening call looking for just over 1% down.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Alex Dace. He's a portfolio manager on Thombo Wealth. Alex, morning. Appreciate your time. Let's quickly touch MTN results, which came out yesterday. The dividend has been cancelled. They'd warned us about that. Broadly, good set of numbers. Exiting Syria, Iran, which is a fairly small income for them, about 4% of EBITDA, and truthfully, challenging regions. Your take on the MTN results and MTN generally? Is it a stock you're looking at investing or in already?
Good morning, Simon. MTN for me, I can certainly see a lot of optionality and upside in the business, but it's always so much headwinds facing the business. So look at this set of results, for example. So it's looking very positive in Nigeria. Even Ghana doing operationally quite well, but now we hear that there's going to be more regulatory headwinds as well in Ghana. You know, that tends to be more taxes and pressure on the fees because they're getting quite big there. You know, at the same time, we've still got the issue regarding Afghanistan. That litigation battle is still ongoing there. Another positive, however, is that I think that exiting specifically the Middle East, I think it's going to be a big positive, Syria and Iran as well, potentially. And the balance has been cleaned up quite a lot. So you can see sort of the benefit of that coming through at some stage. But Rob Shooter also stepping down now. I guess there will be question marks again who's going to be the new leadership team. But it has invested quite a lot in leaders over the last few years. I would imagine it could be most likely an internal appointment. But the key for MTN is if they can bring down debt from these levels through asset sales and through operational performance, the equity value or the share price will certainly follow suit. So that is really the key. So the investors are still sitting on sidelines to know if they can do it and also the pace of what they can do it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And those sales will generate some, 25-odd billion, apparently. That would certainly go a long way to helping the debt. A story breaking overnight, President Trump issuing an executive order that essentially in the next 45 days will ban any transaction related to WeChat or Tencent. The wording is really, really bad. Tencent is off some 6.8% overnight in Hong Kong. We could suddenly find ourselves as a market with obviously NASPAS process holding of Tencent. We could suddenly find ourselves as a country very much in the middle of the trade wars and on the wrong side. In other words, you know, market under pressure if Tencent is under pressure.
Yeah, so for Tencent, the biggest risk has always been regulatory. Now, predominantly, we always thought about regulatory risk within China. Mm-hmm. But with the trade wars really accelerating now, it's becoming quite evident that it's going to be from the United States. So this is certainly something to be very concerned about. I think the key to remember is that, you know, Tencent at this moment is not really big in the U.S. yet. Yes, they've got WeChat and so forth, but it's still a small percentage of the overall business. But they do have stakes in multiple businesses in the U.S.
Yeah.
You know, for example, you know, Activision Blizzard and, you know, Tesla and Warner, Time Warner and so forth. So there's quite a few businesses that are equity stakes in there, which could be affected. And obviously, Tencent's long-term goal is trying to expand outside of China. So that could also potentially impact some of the U.S. allies and so forth. So certainly something we need to look at a lot more closely. But as you did say, the executive order is poorly written and it's quite difficult to really get a sense about what it is now. But this, of course, creates uncertainty. And as a result, I think you're going to see a very volatile share price until we get some sort of clarity what is exactly going to happen.
Yeah, and importantly also, he does say 45 days. This is not effective immediately. But Alex, as you said, that I mean, I've seen lawyers on out of the US and Twitter saying, we're actually not quite sure whether he means WeChat or Tencent, because that is a big distinction, particularly for us here. Sunrail reporting that they sort of got $30 billion they want to spend shovel ready for a year, which means, you know, the year we are currently in that runs for the government through to end of April. That's a fair chunk amount. And obviously, you know, it's going to go into construction spending, roads and upgrades. Does this sort of bring any construction stocks to the fore, perhaps worth looking at? Robex and Afrimat jumped to mind to me, or is this still just a sector that's been so battered that perhaps best left alone?
Yes, so the construction companies I've been talking about it for quite some time, specifically Robex. If you read a couple of the guidance notes in the past, they said they were quite optimistic about tenders within Sunrail. So certainly, I think I would believe that Afrimat will be beneficiaries of that. I think the good thing if you do invest in Afrimat is they're doing very well at the moment in iron ore. And also there's potential corporate action in the coal business. So if there's any sort of recovery in the construction business, it will be seen as a bonus as an Afrimat shareholder. So that's probably maybe the best way to play it. So it's both a call option on AC construction. While Robex will certainly also benefit, but I do prefer Afrimat in general business over it. But then again, you just never know who's going to get these contracts. I mean, we've already seen all the corruption already happening in the PPE side of things. Let's just hope that these contract allocations will be clean or cleaner, and you know, some of the listed companies will benefit from it. You know, listed construction has been decimated over the last decade, so a lot of the place is unlisted these days. So it is not as easy just to say this illicit entity will benefit from any sort of construction-related activity.
Yeah, it's a fair point. A lot of the construction is unlisted in this space. Afrimat, typically, Afrimat's just, you know, one of those stocks that just always does well. And as always for Afrimat, you know, it's trading up at those highs. Never discount Andres van Heerden and his team there. Alex Dace, Portfolio Manager at Mthombo Wealth. Appreciate the time this morning.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting with Tracy Davies, she's Executive Director at Just Share. Tracy, morning, appreciate your time. Looking at the Investec AGM, which was held yesterday, and really what we got here is Investec came out and gave really what looks to me solid disclosure on their climate risk and their exposure essentially to fossil fuels, drilling down into, you know, coal, oil, natural gas versus renewables. This is something which you as Just Share and more broadly really looking for banks to help investors understand that risk, that exposure to climate change. Tracy? Nope, not finding Tracy Davies there at all. I mean, the issue there, what we're looking for really, and I know it's what Just Share's been calling for, is that they want the banks to say, this is what our exposure is, this is where we sit in terms of the risks and what we have with it. And the logic is quite simple. You know, coal, oil, natural gas, ultimately in the longer term, these are going to be risk assets for companies. These are going to be risk exposure to a company. And it really is a case of, you know, we need to know as investors exactly where we sit in that space, exactly how it works, so we can make those informed decisions. I know the other banks have not been maybe as sort of, you know, it's sort of forthcoming with it. Tracy Davies, Just Share, do we have you on the line?
I think so.
Yeah, there we go. Yes, I can. Sorry about that. Just the Investec AGM. I mean, they gave us actually some really good disclosure on what their climate risk is, their exposure to sort of, you know, the old school fossil fuels versus the renewables. A very important step in terms of disclosure for investors to help understand risks on banks' balance sheets.
Absolutely. This is a really groundbreaking step in South Africa. As you know, and as you mentioned, organizations like ours have been really working for a number of years to try to get the banks to make this kind of disclosure, because unless their shareholders and stakeholders have a grasp on their exposure to these fossil fuels, it's very difficult to make risk assessments about, you know, material financial risk mm-hmm. posed by climate change in the coming decades. And what's particularly nice about Investec's disclosure is that, as you said, it's broken its monetary exposure. It said how much each of the fossil fuels is as a percentage of its exposure, but it's also given a monetary figure, which makes it quite a lot easier to grasp what's happening here.
Yeah, I mean, that's what stands out to me. Total fossil fuels, $8 billion. Renewables, $2.8 billion. I mean, I suppose we could give them the benefit of the doubt and say it's getting there. And I imagine those two numbers will hopefully in the next couple of years switch around. What's also fairly significant here is that, you know, this wasn't a process that took Investec years and years. I mean, truthfully, this is something that a bank and a large bank should, these are numbers they should be able to pull out fairly easily.
Well, exactly, and that's what we've also been saying for a while. In the face of most of the banks previously saying that this kind of disclosure would take them 3 to 5 years to get right, and you know, I think what's happening there is that they're wanting to kind of present a perfect assessment of every single asset on their books and the extent to which it's exposed to climate change, because of course, climate risk exposure is not limited to fossil fuels. You've also mm-hmm. got things like even your mortgage book, you know, can be potentially exposed to natural disasters and so on and so forth. So, you know, there's a sense that everything has to be perfect and it's going to take us years to figure this out. And one of the things Investec really took on board from its engagement with its stakeholders was, this doesn't have to be perfect. Just give people an idea of what's going on and then make it better as the years go by, you know. And I think that's what they've done. They haven't included climate scenario analysis, mm-hmm. For example, and they don't have targets to reduce that, to switch those numbers around, as you say. But they indicate that is coming. That's coming in the next financial year. And that's good. You know, they've done something, they've done a lot, and they've committed to doing more. And I think that that's a really big step. And what we really want to see now is these numbers for all the banks so that you can compare them and yes. see who is most exposed.
Yeah, compare them. And you mentioned mortgage books, and suddenly my eyes get very big. That's another whole rabbit hole. We'll leave that one there for now. We chatted, I think it was probably late May, as you know, at that point we were deep in hard lockdown. Online AGMs were suddenly something that was going to start happening. In one sense, I really liked it because it means I can, you know, attend an AGM even when I'm in a different city, because that's often a challenge, particularly for smaller shareholders. You know, you're in Cape Town, the AGM's in Joburg or London or wherever it might be. You had concerns at the time, and the concerns were particularly around questions being edited or questions just being, frankly, not passed through to the board. We had Zeda being accused of this by a number of people who were at that online AGM. From your sense, at just share, how's those online AGMs been going? Has it mostly worked? Has it been as bad as your fears were back when we chatted in May?
You know, Simon, it's an incredibly mixed bag. We've been to about 12, when I say been to, of course, I mean attended mm-hmm. virtually, mm-hmm. 12 of these over the past 3 months, and also spoken to and had feedback from people who've been to others that we didn't attend. And, you know, it's been a really frustrating process. There have been a couple that have been run very, very well and have been very efficient and very inclusive and very clear about how things were going. But let me highlight some of the big issues. So on the questions, there's no uniformity about how the questioning works. So a number of the companies had a question and answer session right at the start of the AGM, so literally within the first 2 to 5 minutes. And a lot of people are still struggling to log in. You know, you might be a few minutes late, something happens, you know, your doorbell rings or whatever the case may be, and you can miss the whole thing. We've seen with a lot of the platforms that, so if I type in a question on my laptop at home, it takes, you know, a minute or two for it to actually appear on the system. And so there have also been a couple of AGMs where the person monitoring the questions has said, "Chair, no questions, you can move on." Meanwhile, there's a whole bunch of people furiously typing questions that haven't actually appeared on the screen yet. So lots of problems with how the questions are, when the questions are asked and answered, and how they are communicated, because hardly any of them allow people to actually ask questions verbally. They're almost all typed up, you know.
Yeah.
So that really has been a big issue for us. And of course, then there's no recourse, right? You can't speak, you can't do anything when your question hasn't been answered. Funnily enough, Investec's AGM yesterday was an example of this. You know, questions right up front. Questions took a while to be posted on the board, and by the time they came up, they'd moved on. And so there were three or four questions that just went unanswered. So that's really something that needs to be sorted out. Also, you know, the virtual format, I think what we've realized, one of the really important things about AGMs is that you get to look the board in the eye.
Yeah.
You know, people get to look at them, see who they are. If a question is asked of them, you know, they've got to look you back in the eye and answer that question. And that's just completely absent in the virtual AGMs. I mean, most of them, even when people were speaking, you couldn't see them because it was just a voice. There were lots where there were no cameras at all, so you couldn't see anybody speaking at all. It was just a disembodied voice coming across the airwaves. And that is a problem, you know. And then also just from a technical point of view, I mean, it's a bit of a mission for, you know, all these different platforms, how you get your login details, what you need to send them, when you need to send it by, how long it takes them to send it back. You know, I can go on and on. There are all sorts of problems. So I'm not saying that these things don't work at all. And as you say, they are really useful for people who can't attend in person. But first of all, they can't be a replacement for in-person AGMs. They have to be, you know, it has to be an additional option. You must still be able to attend in person when we're allowed to do such things again. And second of all, it has to be some uniformity and guidance from the JSE on how they are conducted and minimum requirements. Because what's happening now, as you said, for example, with regard to Zeta, I mean, it's really arguable that AGM did not comply with the Companies Act. But has any, you know, nothing's happened. You know, is the JSE going to do anything? Are their investors going to do anything? You know, you can't just have people rampantly dismissing these really fundamental shareholder rights with absolutely no consequence.
Yeah, and that's an issue. I think there's definitely some advantages, but seemingly lots of issues. We'll get there in time, but we need to get there fast. Tracy Davies, Executive Director, Just Share. When you protect your monthly income against the risk of injury, illness and death, you protect your future and the impact you make on those around you. FMI has been protecting South Africans' income for over 25 years, constantly innovating to provide greater claim certainty and cover for more occupations than ever before. Make your impact, protect your income first. FMI, life done better. FMI, a division of Bidvest Life, is a licensed life insurer and authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Praveen Subramani. He is CEO, Private Bank Lending at FNB. Praveen, appreciate your time this morning. Talking investment properties, I mean, I think when people buy an investment property, they think about lots of issues, costs, etc. And the issue that you raised in a note you sent out really is around, at some time we're going to have to be selling this property and really to give thought as an investor as to what that strategy might be and what would perhaps trigger it. In other words, have this plan already in place, even if maybe the sale is years away, but have a strategy, have a plan for exiting one day.
Certainly. Morning, Simon, and good morning to your listeners. Certainly, property investment right now is one of those very important and topical questions. Probably every property investor right now is reflecting on should I be buying, should I be holding, or should I be selling my current property investment. I suppose one probably needs to reflect on the initial criteria that was used in purchasing the property investment before deciding on a way forward. And usually those three criteria revolve around what is my objective of the investment, what is my time horizon, and probably what are the milestones that I'm looking out for in terms of this investment or over the life of the investment. Typically, your objectives revolve around yield or rental yield,
mm-hmm.
or equity and capital growth. And usually, it's a combination of both of those factors that the investor chooses to purchase an investment property on. The time horizon when it comes to property is certainly not a short-term investment like equities. It's probably more a medium to long-term investment. And usually, that's revolving around the 5 to 10-year horizon. And the reason for this is the friction cost attached to properties. I mean, you can't readily buy and sell property without incurring friction costs. And 5 to 10 years generally gives you enough time to offset some of those friction costs and generate some of those yield and equity benefits that come with a property investment. And the milestones component is really about reflecting on both objectives and the time horizon and figuring out key milestones within the life of the investment that you want to consider. And that would trigger off whether you choose to exit, diversify, or recycle some of your equity. But in large, it's important that you have this plan well in advance and build up towards this and not at any stage suddenly decide, based on the economic situation, to change your property investment strategy. Yeah, I think that's quite an important point.
Yeah, they sort of don't wake up on a Tuesday and think, I'm going to sell it. I like your key point there. When you buy it, know why you were buying and have that in sense, because that will help inform the exit. Praveen Subramani, CEO, Private Bank Lending at FNB. That's it for today. You'll find us live every weekday morning, 6:30 a.m. on the MoneyWeb website or the MoneyWeb app. Podcast available on the website and all good podcast aggregators from 7 a.m. This show was proudly sponsored by FMI, a division of Bidvest Life Limited. Make your impact, protect your income first. The views and opinions expressed in this show do not reflect the views and opinions of FMI. Massive thanks to my team, Eddie, and this morning, Masekhla Gwangwa, and to you for listening, my guests, for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. Monday's a holiday, so we'll chat again Tuesday.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.